Call the meeting of the Higher Education Finance Committee to order. And maybe to begin with, we can just do the minutes. Need a motion to approve the minutes from Wednesday, March the 22nd. So we had a chance to read them. We're done. Okay.
Did you read them?
Yes, I did.
They were very
been
interesting.
Here for a while, so.
And we thank you for that. Larry Haas moves minutes of Wednesday, March the 22nd. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Okay, our first bill today is House File 2817. Dammer, and I will move the House File 2817 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. That will be the motions. Welcome to the Distinguished Higher Education Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is indeed distinguished, and I appreciate the chance to be here. House File 2817 deals with grants that are obtained through the Office of Higher Education to people enrolled in the people serving in the military. This came about because of a situation I had with a constituent of mine who moved into the Rochester area to serve as a recruiter, if you will, along with his wife. They moved from North Dakota. And when they moved there, his wife enrolled in cosmetology school. And the first thing he did, of course, is look at financial aid type of things through FAFSA and that sort of thing. And she was awarded a grant of $3,300 through the Office of Higher Ed. And so that was all fine. And then in an audit, and so what happened is $2,500 of that $3,300 was advanced, and they had $800 to go later in the year. During a subsequent audit with the Revenue Department or whoever does this along with the school, came to find out that they were not residents of Minnesota for the required 12 months. Even though when she applied, she used her North Dakota driver's license to apply for it, just through lack of information, weren't aware that basically they were ineligible because they didn't live there 12 months. So basically what happened is they were asked to write a check back for the $2,500, which is something they really hadn't planned on. He brought this to my attention, came to find out, indeed, that is something that they didn't qualify for. In the meantime, he was in the process of being redeployed or restationed up into North Dakota, I believe is where they went. So this was kind of an in-process thing about a year ago. So basically what this bill does, Mr. Chair and members, is it says that if you are a member of the military being transferred on military orders, we do have some language to say they should be here. It basically exempts them from that 12-month requirement so they can apply for aid if they're here in the state and enrolled in the military.
You have an amendment. I don't know if it's ready yet.
I do. I have a few copies here.
I think we have them now.
Not the whole.
Oh. Maybe between yours and...
Yeah, I have four copies here, Mr. Chair.
It almost does it. I think Doc, you do not have.
Kathy probably can show it to me. There's one.
Oh, so here. Representative Haas, do you have one?
No, I do not.
This is a nice revision.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then I think we'll be all right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I worked with the Office of Higher Ed on this particular proposal, and we did some things with the language. And I'd like to offer this amendment, if you would. It's the AO6 1119 amendment, Mr. Chair. I've got Tricia Grimes here from the Office of Higher Ed to explain. We tried to do a clerical change to clean things up. I'll let her address that if it's okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Tricia Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The amendment, page 1, line 17, we were afraid the phrasing that we had there in the first place might make it seem like you couldn't take any online courses and get a state grant, which is not what we had in mind. What we had in mind was that if you were a high school graduate from Minnesota, and your family moved after graduation, but you hadn't lived in another state long enough to be a resident there, that you could still come back and be considered a resident in Minnesota, but you had to be physically attending courses in Minnesota. So that's why we strike the enrolled in a course requiring physical attendance at a, and insert physically attending a Minnesota post-secondary institution. And then the second one is page 1, line 23. We decided to delete the requirement that the person on active duty military service would have to file a state income tax return in Minnesota, in fact being a little bit more military friendly.
Any questions on the amendment? I guess not. So I'll move amendment 1119. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, there are, in addition to the military in this bill, Representative Demmer was kind enough to include three other categories that financial aid administrators had brought to our attention as things we wanted to change. One was the one about the clarifying that if they graduate from Minnesota high school, their students, as long as they physically attend school in Minnesota. The next one was the military one. Then, if they are relocated to Minnesota from an area declared a presidential disaster area, that would be also included. And then if they're defined as a political, legal refugee, with a just definition that's in statute, they would also be included as Minnesota residents. We estimate that altogether, there will be roughly 50 or so additional state grant recipients the first year and 25 a year after that, assuming that we wouldn't have the Hurricane Katrina students around terribly long time. And that at about $2,000 average state grant, that means it would increase state grant spending by about $100,000 the first year and $50,000 a year after that.
Thank you. We have some other witnesses representing them.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, we do have somebody from the National Guard. I think Mike Clubase is here. Could come and speak to their feelings about the bill.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Mike Puglisi, I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Just a quick comment. You know, this bill is in keeping with the spirit of the governor's current initiatives for veterans and military, so we certainly have no objection to it. And we come across issues like this once in a while, so I think this would help clarify that problem.
All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Colonel Danny Shields. I'm the Assistant to the Adjutant General, Department of Military Affairs. I'll echo Mr. Puglisi's comments. This certainly is in keeping with the governor's intent to make Minnesota more user-friendly, if you will, for veterans and military personnel. So we have no objection also, as well as, so long as the higher education personnel don't have any objections either. Certainly there's a small price tag that's associated with this.
Any questions? I don't see any, so thank you very much for that. Should ask if there's anyone else in the audience who would like to speak for or against. Pretty quiet. That's good. Yeah. Well, Representative Felsen.
A question of either the author or maybe Ms. Grimes when you're ready for that. I'm going back to that amendment we attached. If either the author or Ms. Grimes could comment again about the physically attending a Minnesota post-secondary educational institution. And a couple of things come to my mind. with physically attending. There are people who student teach, people who are involved in internships. They may not be physically attending the institution. They may be enrolled, or they would be enrolled, if they're student teaching. If you could comment on whether we're being too restrictive in that regard for internships and student teaching and maybe some other kinds of programs where you're not actually physically attending a Minnesota post-secondary educational institution, but you are enrolled.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that's a good question. We had a similar question in the office, and I might note that Subdivision 8 resident student there, the person has to meet one of the following conditions. And so if they meet one of the other conditions, they're also included. I do believe we have in rules procedures for students who are, for example, attending a study abroad program or doing something like student teaching where they might not be enrolled in Minnesota. They might be teaching in Hudson or whatever. But my understanding was when I asked several people with legal expertise, I believe even Kathy Novak was one of them, that because it says the student has to meet any one of these five clauses, that the students would be covered.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Why did, if you could revisit then the amendment, why we dropped enrolled? What is the advantage from someone's perspective, either the state or the student, if you drop the word enrolled?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the word enrolled could actually be put back. We were just trying to use language that made it clear that we weren't excluding Minnesota students who might be living in Minnesota and attending online. And when it said a course requiring physical attendance, we were afraid that's how it could be interpreted. But I don't think there's any reason not to include the word enrolled.
I mainly wanted to have a discussion at this point if we're comfortable that with those meeting that various criteria doesn't prohibit people who I think all of us would agree should be eligible for in-state tuition, their student teaching. I hadn't thought about studying abroad. That would be another interesting one to talk about, but if he still is comfortable with the language and feels it's not overly restrictive, then that's fine with me.
Any other questions? If not, we're ready to vote. Again, the motion is to lay over House File 2817 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? We're done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Our next bill will be House File 3346, and the author is en route. You can shuffle some papers, change seats, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, you
want to
switch?
No, I don't think so. Oh, terrible.
You will certainly make something new with it.
Yeah, I don't want any of it. And this is Steve Gilgill.
Oh.
Well, he introduced us and we both forget. Eden Valley. So, I mean, yes, it is called the Garden of Eden. What's his name? Oh, sure. Yeah.
Someone up there.
This offers a good opportunity for our members to visit with each other.
People in the part of the legislative reform.
Right.
Between
yeah.
Those.
That's right.
A good day up there.
The guard.
Oh,
hey Jim, you can read the new bill.
See,
I can do the bill for him if you want. I think
it's way too short.
They said 11 o'clock.
No, they didn't.
They didn't?
They recessed.
That's it?
That's it.
Wait, sure, did you see the original bill?
No.
It was double X-rated.
We could do like we did in school. We could go around and have everybody tell us what they did this weekend.
Oh, you want me to go over the bill that I'm working on?
Yeah, maybe to review a bill about
adult. On the adult entertainment industry? I'll let Ms. Novak do the definitions to everybody.
The job to it.
This book, that game, what happens the schools? So you have games against
the yes.
It's in. Are we meeting on Wednesday?
It'll be delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the bill for certain higher ed.
No, this is what it changed. This is my deal.
When we're hearing that,
this quake involves the head of your mom,
my
dad, and
it has.
We don't want any.
One shot on the back of the other.
Well, that was the place.
Thank you.
You talking about my bill again?
No.
Well, you know, the thing is that these
first was elected.
No, yep, they established this in Meeker County.
I mean,
two blocks
had a little mess,
and then all the innocent Meeker County people taken advantage of by all these Stearns County
now
people.
Now they're covering somewhere between 14 and 15.
That's right.
50%.
Just our perverts are traveling.
Most of the suburbs, with the exception of Plymouth, are really inner ring and plain.
Get everyone's attention again.
Student population.
Representative Lanning, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I'll move that House File 3346. The action will be delayed, offer for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And you can go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And sorry to keep you waiting. I was in another committee, and I understand the first bill went quickly.
We already voted on this one.
House File 3346 brings back an issue that was before this committee last year. And that is to reduce the student share with regard to the cost of education from higher education from 46% to 45%. You passed this provision last year in your bill, and it was passed on the House floor. But unfortunately, we lost the provision in conference committee. This provision was in a bill that I brought to you this last session, House File 1586. And I want to thank members of the committee for the work you did last year. You did, I think, very good work with regard to financial aid and passed out a good bill. and there were some good changes that survived conference, and this particular provision did not. And so we're bringing it back, and hopefully we'll be able to move it forward again this year. What the bill does, members, is to address financial aid for 70,000 Minnesota college students that come from low to moderate income families. And as I mentioned, it would lower the student share of the cost by 1% from 46 to 45%. The cost of this provision would be $7 million for fiscal year 07, and the appropriation would be added to the program base for the next fiscal biennium. Now, the effect of this bill, members of the committee, would be to basically cover the tuition increases that have been incurred by students in public institutions. Essentially, students who come from families with adjusted gross income of $50,000 or less or thereabouts would essentially have their tuition increase offset by their eligibility for this grant award. And the reason this is needed and important is that, as you know, while students didn't experience the kinds of percentage increases they did in prior years, the increases from 05-06 to 06-07 on tuition range from 6% to 7.7% in the different sectors of higher education. And so this this bill, this provision, would provide relief to low to moderate income families, essentially, as I mentioned, those earning less than $50,000 a year, that would really cover those tuition increases. And the reason that's important, when you had in prior years tuition increases of double digit, I think this is very much needed and welcome relief. And also, as I think you're aware, members of the committee, that due to an eligibility formula change made by the U.S. Department of Education, several thousand Minnesotans saw reductions in both their Pell and state grants this school year. And Minnesota uses the same federal need analysis in the state grant program, and so when the U.S. Department of Education made the change, it had an effect on our state grant students as well. The students most affected were those from families whose incomes were too high to qualify for a Pell grant, but low enough that they did not receive a state grant. These students, in the most extreme cases, lost several hundred dollars as their tuitions also rose by several hundred dollars. And I'd also point out, members, that we have not changed this student share factor since the year 2000. And in 2001 to date, the percentage has been at 46%. With that, Mr. Chairman and members, I know that there are others who would like to testify on this bill as well, and so I'll defer to them at this point.
Okay. Doctor, unless there's any questions, Dr. Laird? Welcome to the committee.
Good day, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you. It's good to be back, as always. And thank you, Representative Lanning, for offering this proposal. I might start today with three items of context for this bill, and I'll do it very briefly. As many of our business leaders and some higher education leaders are commenting more frequently, the rest of the world is not waiting for us to come to grips with the challenges that are ahead of us for the development of intellectual capital. Some 20 nations have taken very bold initiatives in the last decade in higher education, and they are our competition. Second, we've been through the demographic changes with you. We think you all understand of what they're about, and we all understand that they're now on us. Our worry is that unless we make some pretty radical changes in the performance of our institutions and our students in this state, those demographics are going to be our destiny. We've argued, we will continue to do so, that the changes that are upon us are manageable in this state, but we can't do it on automatic pilot. And then third, it's especially appropriate to give this point today, given Representative Lanning's reference to the changes at the federal level. Since World War II, higher education financing in this country has been based upon a three-legged stool concept of partnership: the federal government, the states, and individual institutions. Over the last several years, as you'll note in our handouts, two legs of that stool have been getting shorter, and one has been getting longer. And that just calls into question the geometry of a three-legged stool. There is a limit to how far out of kilter you can have that stool and still be operating in balance and in sync with changing conditions. So those are the contextual comments that I would offer for us today. Now, we understand that this is not the normal year in which to bring significant policy changes to the legislature. And we think what we are proposing here is a pretty modest change in the total shape of things. But we ask you to be especially cognizant of the building pressure on low and especially middle-income students and their families who are getting caught in the bind between rising tuition and insufficient financial aid. And we believe that bind ought to cause all of us to increase the priority for funding need-based financial aid. We do need to remember that in the absence of adjustments in one of the legs of that stool, every time tuition increases go up, the only place that most low-income and middle-income families can go and still have their student attend college is to increase their debt. And that's not good policy, and that's not good economics for them and their future families. Representative Lanning indicated the proposal here is for a $7 million addition to the base. And the economic efficiency of that for this particular year has been mentioned very clearly. The proposal that we're going to, in terms of the effects of this proposal that we're going to look at, if you'll turn to the charts, the first chart shows the impact of this additional funding in the base on families at three different income levels on the left-hand side at all five of the sectors of our higher education enterprise. We should note that the changes that are modeled here assume that the Office of Higher Education will very soon make the adjustment that's allowed under law that you passed last year to increase the living and miscellaneous allowance. So the numbers that you see here are inclusive of that, and we're hopeful that they will make that change very quickly, since this is the time in which families are now making their judgments about how they're going to be able to afford college attendance for next fall. Let's just take a parent or a family with a parental income of $40,000, the middle bar, and let's read across here to the state universities. The tuition increase that's anticipated for students in the state universities for next year is $425 up on top, and the proposed change in the state grant would bring that student a $508 increase. In other words, it covers 119% of that student's anticipated tuition increases for next year. Now, the impact of these changes are not uniform across systems, and they're obviously not uniform across income levels either, which is consistent with the design of the state grant program. Take the same set of institutions, families with $60,000 in family income would get a $375 increase, which would represent 88% of the additional costs incurred by the tuition increase. Okay, with that, we can come back. I'll be happy to answer questions if you have them afterwards. Second graph shows what's been happening in the number of awards by system since 1995, and you'll see a fair amount of interactivity here. Note especially the substantial increase in the number of awards in Minsky, the green line up on top. For our purposes, we want you to see that the number of awards in the private sector have been declining for a number of years. You see a steep increase in the private proprietary sector until 2003, and then a leveling off. And you see a fairly steady increase in grant recipients at the University of Minnesota. Part of the declines that you notice, especially in our sector, are due to the failure to have either the Pell increase or increases in the maximum grant or in the cap, which applies to our students. So the net effect of that on students in our system is shown in the blue and green graph, which follows. The green lines represent the average state grant per recipient in the private sector. The blue lines represent the average institutional grant which is being made. And I must say again, as I often have before this committee, that the institutional commitment to student financial aid is not an accidental derived result in our group of institutions. This is a very purposeful action on the part of our institutions. Since 1997, the amount of money that our institutions commit to student financial aid has increased from $121 million per year to $228 million per year. And just like our family budgets, there's a limit to how long that can continue to occur. The next chart shows that in a different form. We're looking here just at a snapshot of 2003 with traditional undergraduates. See the average Pell grant, a little over 1,000. Other federal grants, which would be work study for the most part, at a pretty low level. The Minnesota State grant on average, somewhere around 3,200 to 3,300. Other Minnesota grants, very minimal. And institutional grants in that year, almost an average of $6,000. And then private grants, which would be special scholarship fundings received by individual students. final draft, which we can come back to again if you have questions about it, is an attempt to describe for you in graphic form how the additional funds would be distributed if you were to enact the $7 million increase. And we think it's very important that you understand that that this is a pretty balanced result, and it reflects the distribution that that has been developing in the state grant program for some years. Finally, we would urge you to think about the importance and the timing of this recommendation for our families, for our students, and especially in light of the demographic change that many of us have spoken to you about. We are very close to the point where we are not going to have sufficient college graduates in this state to replace those that are retiring. And for those of us who are hoping to retire in the near future, this is where our own self-interest and our community interest intersects. If we're unable to produce sufficient college graduates to replace us, then all of us are going to have some adjustment in our standard of living, and those on whom we are depending to provide assistance and support when we need it are going to have a new contract in their hands. So we look forward to working with you. I'd be happy to answer questions about our graphs or our proposal here, and we fervently hope that you'll be able to find a way to do this year.
Thank you, Dr. Laird. Questions? Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lanning, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I seem to recall, as you were going over this, the discussions we had last year, and I'm glad this committee supported it then, and I'm sure we will again this year, and we will hope it isn't reduced this in some kind of a conference committee action. But I believe we have the funding to do this. You indicated it would be about a $7 million right. price tag, and the grant program has that sufficient funds in it now, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, this would be an additional appropriation as to what was authorized under last year's law. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, there are some additional funds that are available, and perhaps Dr. Laird could address that issue.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate that because I was trying to recall as we went forward on this, and Representative Crossan had some legislation about how the money would retain with the higher ed budget, but we made the allocation, but then the share was reduced, so the money must be there, it seems to me. So maybe somebody could. I'm just concerned that we have the allocation as we move this forward, and I would think we do.
Dr. Laird, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, as I indicated earlier, we are assuming for the purposes of this proposal that the funds inside the grant program will remain there, mm-hmm. and they will be allocated to the living and miscellaneous allowance as you provided for in last year's change. So this $7 million would be in addition to that amount. It would be new money.
Okay.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to take a crack at that question or would have any information to share?
Mr. Chair and members, Mark McCann with the Office of Higher Education. We released a projection report back in mid-February that indicated there would be roughly $18 million in the grant program for this biennium above the amount needed, given our current assumptions on tuition and enrollment. And as Dr. Laird said, current law does allow us to allocate that back to LME. We have a kind of a decision date of around the middle of April, to do that. We're still waiting for some enrollment projections from MNSCU in order to do that. The $300 number that is being used by the Colorado College Council is not the full $18 million. It's about 75% of that number. We feel we need to leave something not committed for uncertainties for fiscal year 07. But the law does allow us to make a second change next year sometime as well. So,
Representative Cox.
Okay, well, my original question was trying to figure out whether we sent out here a balanced bill with an appropriation that lined up with the 45% student share. And then when that changes, it theoretically should, unless we change the appropriation amount, you'd think there would have been money left over. Maybe where that some of that came from. But really what you've indicated is there are sufficient funds no matter how they got there, and that it wouldn't require an allocation from the a revision to the budget now because the money is there. Is that correct?
Mr. Berg has something to add.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, what you're getting at is, can we do this without allocating new funds?
Yes.
The answer is yes, but that will eat into the LME increase that's being projected, but as Mr. Miscanis and Dr. Laird mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to take the money which is currently being anticipated to go to an LME increase and use it for the share, but you could do that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Carlson.
Chairman, while we're on the numbers, you know, this afternoon at 3 o'clock is going to be the House budget resolution, and as I was sitting here trying to remember those numbers from last week, and you and I are both on ways and means, I think it's important that everyone knows what the majority caucus is proposing in the House, and that's funding $118 million below the governor on the expenditure side. Now, the governor had recommended $4.8 million for the higher ed committee. Whether that's achievable when you more than cut his funding level in half, you know, if you assume that each of the funding divisions is probably going to have some needs, and we're at about a 40-50% level. What I'm talking about here is the governor had proposed something like $197 million in spending in the House budget resolution as it's going to move forward this afternoon if the majority party continues to, or if you bring it up today and continue to vote the way things went in Ways and Means, it'll be an $88 million spending level.
Mr. Chair.
So that, just something to keep in mind, I know we're not allocating today, but by the way, Ways and Means will be setting, in all likelihood, two targets. One, it'll tell us what we can spend as a committee this session, and the other thing it will indicate for us is what our tables can be for the next biennium. And if I might ask Dr. Laird, being that you've done some work on this, or maybe ESO, what the tail is here and what you're using to make that best guess, because you'd have to anticipate some guess as to what tuition levels may be next biennium. And it's not going to roll forward as a straight 7 and 7
yep.
or 14. It's going to be some number higher than that, and that's where we need your expertise to let us know what that tail would be, because they'll watch that very carefully when this bill comes over to the Ways and Means Committee if we do in fact set tails, unless we choose to be silent on that.
Identify yourself for the record again.
Chair Gay, Mark Miscanis, the Office of Higher Education. Representative Carlson, the fiscal note that we prepared for the Department of Finance does keep a level amount of $7.2 million for 07, 08, and 09. And that's, we certainly understand that tuition will go up and enrollment changes, but under the convention of the way this program is funded, as a fixed appropriation as opposed to some kind of forecasted program, that's the standard way of approaching this. So it's not built into the tails of those kinds of things, but certainly there is a number and increase in the out years to recognize this change.
Okay, so that, Mr. Chairman, just so we're clear, that assumes no tuition increase, no enrollment increase, just you're just rolling the $7 million forward.
So that's we're just rolling it forward. We're simply we are not ignoring the fact that those things occurred. This is just a convention of budgeting for this particular program.
Representative Abler?
Well, just to remind members about the whole picture of our status that we're at, the resolution today will talk about $88 million spending, which is really 100 and some million because of some corrections, turnbacks, and I forget the exact number, but I want to remind the audience and the members here is that there's a little glitch that may occur, and that's that little nasty, pesky tobacco e-tax lawsuit, which is worth $360 million a year structural. And so under the, just so you know what both sides have been arguing for some property tax relief, which can still go forward out of the $317 million, it's a big deal, I thought. So there's a lot of matters to be heard before we even decide if there's money for anything. And this would be very interesting, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you're all invited, too. any other questions? Representative Cross.
Mr. Chairman, we're having a discussion here that $14 million, that you're alluding to, and maybe we can check on this between now and this afternoon. I think that was included in the forecast. You're talking about savings and corrections or wherever they come from, not the savings that we were talking about earlier. And I think that $14 million is in the forecast and is therefore in the $88 million, which would mean it's not an add-on, but maybe Mr. Bird can check on that before we go into session this afternoon, because that may full well be a part of the discussion when the budget resolution is up. Not corrections per se, I just picked that one. Wherever those savings are coming at, wherever they're coming from, ESOL is a little bit unique in that they get to now retain that and spend it, in this case, on LME. But other departments, if they have excess revenue, cancel backs or whatever you want to call them in the first year, unused dollars, I think that's generally included in the forecast. And therefore, is not 88 plus 14. I think it's included in the 88. But if there's any doubt on that, I'd like to know the firm answer to that question. And maybe if Mr. Bird could let us all know where that 14 is later in the day, or if he doesn't know now, maybe he knows now, and maybe I'm not correct on this.
Are you ready with an answer, Mr.
Mr. Chair, I would have to look at the individuals, but I mean, the basics of what you're saying are correct. Forecast will anticipated turnbacks, money that isn't going to be spent. That's the starting point. The 88 then builds off of the starting point, but I would have to look at all the specifics. If there are small areas of the budget or larger ones I'm not aware of, like the state grant program where someone enacted a contingent provision to spend the money, then it wouldn't be in there. But since that came up in the forecast, I think it's all in there. I'll have to run it all down.
Mr. Chairman, it is relevant to what's before us here in terms of what we may or may not be able to do as we move forward. That's the only reason I bring it up. Thank you.
This committee will look very hard to find your money, is what we're saying. Representative Lennon.
Mr. Chairman, in response to Representative Carlson's question, I have indicated very clearly to our leadership that I feel strongly about this being a part of our package of where we need to be. And obviously, not knowing what the courts are going to decide about the $317 million, it's hard for us to go and spend that $317 not knowing, because we may need to use that to fill the hole. But whatever money ends up being available to us for additional spending, in my view, this should be a high priority. It's important for us to maintain access to our low to moderate income students in higher education. They have suffered rapidly increasing tuition rates, and we need to provide some relief in order to maintain access. So this ought to be high on our priority list, and I hope that the committee is given the funds and the targets in order to do this.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's another person, student that would like to speak.
All right, sure. Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself and probably in this case tell us where you're from.
Well, thank you. My name's Tim McDonald. I'm president of the Association of Private College Students in Minnesota. I'm a junior at Hamlin, so about 10 miles down the road. I would like to supplement what David talked about, access, as you say, from a student perspective. And now, I'll come from the private college perspective, but it definitely applies both directions, all the way up and down the ladder, even public-private. It's the notion of fit that I really focus on as a student leader. And I have a story I'll share of a friend of mine. I share it not because it's just a story of a student struggling to afford college, but I think it really sums up kind of the purpose of the state grant program and of this bill. He's a roommate of mine. I've been friends with him for 3 years, and he's a small school guy. He does really good at small schools, and he's from Minnesota. He gets a state grant. He's going to be a teacher. He'll stay here when he graduates. And the state grant, along with some Hamlin institutional aid, is what really enables him to come to Hamlin. And he gets $3,000 in state grant. And that was really the tipping point to bring him to Hamlin. So he's a small school guy in the sense that he's getting really an extraordinary experience at Hamlin that he wouldn't get at a different institution. And it definitely works in reverse for other folks too. But you know, he's on the football team, he's a captain, he's really responded well to the small school atmosphere. And as a result, the state will be getting this student into the public service workforce, being a teacher, when he graduates, and he's a better person because he went to the school that fit him best. And then I know many folks who they despise the small schools, they love the big schools. They do well too at the big schools. But it's the notion of fit, and really the low to middle income students making sure that they have the access to the schools that fit them best. And something else student leaders focus on, we're made up of the 17 private college student governments. They are on our board. And something we always talk about is the fact that we do expect our classmates to work and earn their education. We're not expecting to really pay their way. Kind of pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, if you will. But then we ask ourselves, we're like, at what point do the bootstraps break? When the debt load is too much, whether you're going to private school, the University of Minnesota, that it begins to really influence what you can do after you graduate. And again, that affects the access to the school that will fit a low to middle income student the best, which really, it's important for all of us, for the classroom experience and all that. So, on behalf of the 40,000 private college students and all the public students, we really ask that, we know you will, but we ask that you look hard for this funding, because it's a piece of the greater puzzle of enabling access, getting students at the schools that work best for them. They'll stay in Minnesota, most likely. They'll contribute to the economy. It's an investment the state has in itself. So we thank you for all the work you have done, and we encourage this bill specifically. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the young man?
I can answer questions.
Appreciate you coming.
I can do that.
appreciate you coming to testify today. And sure Moy does too. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that the Minnesota State University Student Association is going to be meeting later this week to look at this bill again. But I would remind committee members that that organization also last year sent a letter in support of this provision of reducing the student share from 46 to 45. So this provision has had a history of being supported by both public and private students. So I I wanted to call that to your attention. Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there are others who wanted to speak.
Anyone else that would like to address the committee regarding House File 3346? Evidently not. Then, if you have some further comments, I'll renew my motion.
Just, Mr. Chairman, in closing, thank you for again for what you did last year, and I hope that you will see fit to pass this provision again this year. I'm pleased by the fact that this has strong bipartisan support. We have 20 co-authors, including all four leaders, both the Speaker and Majority Leader, as well as the Minority Leader and Deputy Minority Leader, are all signed on as co-authors of this legislation. And so I ask you to give it favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Chair then renews the motion that House File 3346 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we'll vote on that. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, and that is done. Thank you very much. I believe our committee has also done for the day.